Indigo girls in outlaw country, this is Steve Roll. You're still listening to the Steve Roll Show, Hardcore Troubadour Radio and Outlaw Country. I think we get identified as, I got identified as often as a country artist simply because the first records people heard on me were played on country radio. But I, you know, I, like I said, I in truth came out of coffee houses and, you know, a folk scene in Texas, which there definitely was one. You guys kind of came along when there seemed to be, to me, like a renewed interest in folk music and people stop being afraid to use that word in the real live commercial. Did you realize there were other people with acoustic guitars, like making music that was driven by songs and storytelling that were your age and your contemporaries around the country?
Yeah. And it's funny because when we were in Atlanta, we actually more were like going towards like the sort of post-punk scene because
right.
The folk scene in our neck of the woods was like some of the folk places we would try to go play. They sort of shied away from us because we were kind of loud and our fans were a little bit too boisterous. And I think there was a lot of homophobia that we just didn't even know about that was kind of unspoken in that community. And so, you know, for us in the South, the folk scene was kind of a different vibe. So right. we shied away from it a bit and we're more attached to this DIY, kind of that REM, Driving and Crying, Kevin Kenney, all those people.
Which was me too. I had a 3-piece rockabilly band. So I played, I came to Athens on a fairly regular basis and played. I've got sort of 3 lives there. The last one, you know, before Guitar Town and four of that stuff, I had a 3-piece rockabilly band. And I played the I and I played the 40 Watt, you know, but I, before that, I played The Last Resort. That was the first time I played that since Georgia. I opened for Towns Van Zandt at The Last Resort in like 1973 or 4 or something like that.
Wow.
And then I also played Between the Hedges, which was a Dixie Mafia, you know, cover band joint. And I got fired and asked to leave with a pistol in my face there. So Athens was going through a lot of changes. And for Athens, it surprised me, quite frankly, when Athens of all college towns became the scene that it did. It's right at the point where you guys come along and the REM guys and I kind of came up together, known each other from as long as we've been making records. And they had a lot to do with that. You know, just their success and their staying there, I think, had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there was an art community there from the college that was kind of outsider art, folk art scene, filmmakers. And it just was, you know, a rich kind of post-punk time, but I think
B-52s, Pylon, you know, Dump Truck, all those bands playing, you know, from where I was, I became interested that there was all this other, for lack of a better word, acoustic music, you know, stuff that was about, you know, I never wanted an electric guitar till I was in my late 20s, you know, probably Bruce Springsteen and Elvis Costello, I finally started wanting an electric guitar. But just seeing stuff that was more and more about, and it was happening a lot of different places simultaneously around the country. But I think you guys were pioneers to a certain extent of what, you know, became a whole wave of acoustic music. And you were the first guys that kind of came on my radar anyway.
It's funny because we don't feel like pioneers because we were listening to The Roaches, you know,
right.
In New York and Joan Armatrading and
Farron,
and there were just all these songwriters that were acoustic, but like left of center, you know, a lot of women, and we were listening to them. And so we felt like they were paving the way for us, honestly.
I agree with you, but I think the difference was all of those people were singer-songwriters surviving in like the post-disco age in a very slick music business. And they had to do it by finding a way to adapt. Springsteen did it by having a rock band, and he'd been in rock bands and he knew how to do it. And that's how he did it. But, you know, it was a matter of finding the right producer that could, you know, give you something that radio would play without fucking the songs up. But you guys, I didn't see as much of a gulf between the way your records sounded and the way you sounded live. It was much more acoustic music at its heart in the recording studio and when you got on stage every night. Yeah, I think you pioneered that and a lot of people came along after you and started to emulate that, if that makes any sense.
I think that we were always a bar band, you know, we still feel like a bar band. And so
being the world's loudest folk singers. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we were just used to just doing the bar band thing. And then when we got a record deal, it was the biggest surprise in the whole world. I mean, we had to beg our manager to be our manager. All we ever wanted to do was play the next best gig, which was like 688. You know, that was thrilling to get that. So when we got signed, we did not want to be anything else except for what we were, and we were never going to be allowed to change who we were. We ended up getting signed by this eccentric guy, Roger Klein, or he was our A&R guy. And then we just basically were just what we were. And they never really, I mean, I don't think they knew exactly what to do with us, but they didn't mess with us. And in fact, we had a good long relationship with Epic Records. But when we came out, you know, we were protective in the studio. Scott Litt produced our first couple of albums, and we were just very protective of just doing the thing that we did. We even brought some home musicians in for the first couple of albums, people that we played with.
Smart move if you can do that. I mean, I did it as much as I could. Even recording in Nashville, I had some of my road band, and I had to fight for that stuff in Nashville especially. You know, it just wasn't done. And this was not a singer-songwriter-friendly environment in Nashville. They liked songwriters. They liked to nurture songwriters. And there were still a few publishers that knew that the way that God helped me make it through the night was like Kris Kristofferson write, you know, The Silver Tongue Devil. And there were some people emulating Bob Beckham and that generation of publishers. But in the long run, they wanted the writers to stay home and write songs. And they wanted the artists to come in and pick out the best songs. And I get it, because not everybody was put here to be a songwriter, you know. And I think that sometimes artists don't take responsibility for their part in the demise of the record business, because mediocre material. I think, you know, eventually you'd buy an album and you get one or two songs, and it's because everybody thought that they could write, and not everybody can. Not everybody's put there to do what we do, and it's a tricky thing. It's a weird thing with your audiences. I think, you know, it's about empathy. You know, they don't care so much about what happened to you. They care about the stuff that they hear you sing about that happened to them, you know. And that was the first thing that I learned that probably saved my ass and kept me from, you know, getting off into a corner I couldn't get myself out of. This is Steve Rowe. You're listening to The Steve Rowe Show, Hardcore Troubadour Radio and Outlaw Country. My guests are the Indigo Girls, and the new record, it's out. Support your local record store. You can order from most of your local mom and pop record stores online and buy the record from them. They really need to get it. Buy your vinyl from the mom and pop store, order it, have them ship it to you, and then you can download it on, you know, someplace else if you got to have it right now. Buy them both. That's like this business gets smaller every second. Buy them both, and buy my record, buy the Indigo's new record. It's called Look Long. This is Steve Rowe. You've been listening to the Steve Rowe Show Hardcore Troubadour Radio on Outlaw Country. We're going to take you out of here with the Indigo's, and this was the obvious one to me to take us out. Change My Heart. Who's setting it up?
Emily.
I wrote this as soon as Trump got elected. I mean, the virus is with us now, but you know how you get sick and you feel sick before the virus actually hits? Well, I've been feeling sick ever since that. And so this is a song about, it's a metaphysical song. It's about the forces in the universe and the energy that we can hook into and keep our minds and our hearts open. And there are players at work, but they're considered in this particular metaphor of physics to be weak interactions. So that's basically what the song is about. We learn from where we came before. We're here now. We're going to be the future. And it's all tied together.
And we're all in it together. My guests are the Indigo Girls. This is Steve Rowe. You've been listening to the Steve Rowe Show, Hardcore Troubadour Radio and Outlaw Country. See y'all.